Hello and welcome to Speak the Words of Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango, and I'm upset.
And this is a podcast where we talk about the Stormlight Archive and the Cosmere overall. We're working on Oathbringer, and this week we're going to a wedding. And I hope that Mango's apparently very upset about the fact that we're going to a wedding.
Yeah, because I think I know whose wedding we're going to.
Mango, last week we began the third installment of the Stormlight Archive, Oathbringer. What do you remember from last time?
They discovered Sadeus's corpse.
Mm-hmm.
We got a flashback from Dalinar, which basically just meant that he was really, like, very much enjoying killing.
Yeah,
he enjoyed really battle, enjoyed killing. Sought the thrill. He didn't actively, like, you know, with women, but he wasn't an enabler.
Yeah, he enabled Sadeus to do some pretty terrible things.
Yep. What else?
We did obviously start off with, like, the prologue with Esher and I's POV, which didn't give us a ton of new information. It was a lot of stuff that we knew. I think the big thing from there to, like, hold on to was this, like, black sphere, maybe, like, kind of violet, that seemed to suck in the light around it. Mm. Which we've seen, like, I think there's a couple spheres floating around Elokar at the end of in these prologues. I think this is the one that he gives to Zeth, and that Zeth, like, ditches in Kolinar in his prologue back in Way of Kings. But there's a...
Wait, what?
When Zeth kills Gavilar gives him, like, this glowing sphere, this, like, that's described similarly to this one, I believe. And Zeth just kind of ditches it.
Oh, Kolinar, he doesn't take it with him?
No, he hides it somewhere in Kolinar. And then leaves.
That's weird.
Yeah. Or
Why'd
maybe somewhere
that,
just
Zeth?
Outside of Kolinar. He says he hides it somewhere. And I think this is the same one. It could be a different one that I know is also floating around at this point, but I think it's this one.
I don't like that, but okay.
Yeah. This week we're starting with chapter 4, and it has Dalinar's symbol. And the chapter is titled Oaths. And the epigraph reads, I know that many women who read this will see it only as further proof that I am the godless heretic everyone claims. From Oathbringer, Preface.
Godless heretic everyone claims?
Yes.
Is Yasna writing a book?
I don't know.
I don't know who else claims to be godless, but okay.
The Everstorm came again 2 days after Sadeus was found, and Dalinar felt dread coming from the Stormfather. The Stormfather says that the Everstorm did not come during the earlier desolations, and the Stormfather doesn't remain near to Dalinar like Syl does, as he's the soul of the High Storm. Sometimes Dalinar thinks that the Stormfather doesn't answer his questions just to prove that Dalinar isn't above him. Dalinar forced himself to watch the Everstorm, though its top wouldn't reach Yur-Athiru. Navani joins him and tells him that the Monarchs are delaying their response. Staring into that blackness below, Dalinar thought that he could see what it had done. Houses ripped apart, screams of the occupants lost to the tempest. People caught in their fields, running in a panic before the unpredicted storm. Cities blasted with lightning, towns cast into shadow, fields swept barren, and the vast seas of glowing red eyes coming awake like spheres suddenly renewed with stormlight. Was that real? He whispered. Yes, the Stormfather said. The enemy rides this storm. He's aware of you, Dalinar. Not a vision of the past, not some possibility of the future. His kingdom, his people, his entire world was being attacked. Navani tells him not to beat himself up over having not stopped the Everstorm, and she says that he puts too much of the weight of the world on his shoulders and tries to get him to relax. She attempts to seduce him, but he refuses to go further than a kiss. He says that control is important to him given his past and that he won't give in until they're married. Navani says that none of the Ardents will marry them, as they consider the two of them siblings due to her being Gavilar's widow. Dalinar says that he'd done many things wrong in his last marriage, and Navani says that they had urged him to marry Shushushush for her shard blade. Or her shard plate, sorry, not her blade. She says that she isn't trying to replace his last wife and that she's fine with sharing his affection. I don't remember her, Navani. She looked to him with a frown. I can't remember my wife at all. I don't know her face. Portraits of her are fuzzy smudge to my eyes. Her name is taken from me whenever spoken, like someone has plucked it away. I don't remember what she and I said when we first met. I can't even remember seeing her at the feast that night when she arrived. It's all a blur. I can remember some events surrounding my wife, but nothing of the actual details. It's all just gone. The alcohol? She asked softly. Something more. The old magic. You said you knew both your boon and your curse. He nodded. Oh, Dalinar. People glance at me when her name comes up, and they give me these looks of pity. They see me keeping a stiff expression, and they assume I'm being stoic. They infer hidden pain, when really I'm just trying to keep up. It's hard to follow a conversation where half of it keeps slipping away from your brain. Navani, maybe I did grow to love her. I can't remember. Not one moment of intimacy, not one fight, not a single word she ever said to me. She's gone, leaving debris that mars my memory. I can't remember how she died. That one gets to me, because there are parts of that day I know I should remember. Something about a city in rebellion against my brother, and my wife being taken hostage. That, and a long march alone, accompanied by only by hatred and the thrill. He'd brought vengeance to those who had taken his wife from him. Navani says she wishes she had a Fabriel that could take away his pain, and he says that he is left with only the scars of his pain. He says that he wants his relationship with Navani to be advanced properly with oaths. Navani says that oaths are mere words, and he responds that words are the most important things in his life right now. They brainstorm people who could marry them. Dalinar doesn't want to put Elokar in an awkward position, and he won't let a priest from another religion do it. He suggests the Stormfather, seeing as he's a sliver of the Almighty himself and the closest thing to a god that Voronism has left. Navani says that she'd let a confused dishwasher marry them and asks if he's proposing. Dalinar says yes and makes some mushy comment about love. Several hours later, Dalinar rode up one of Yirithiru's Fabriel lifts up to the roof. The tiers of the city, despite looking circular from the front, were actually more half circles, with the flat sides facing east. The rooms up against that flat side had windows there, providing a view toward the origin. And here, in this central shaft, those windows made up one wall, a pure, single, unbroken pane of glass hundreds of feet tall. Adolin and Renarin rode with him, along with Shallan. Navani was already up above. He felt a rumbling deep within. I'm surprised, Dalinar whispered to the Spren. You agreed to this so willingly. Grateful, but still surprised. I respect all oaths, the Stormfather responded. What about foolish oaths, made in haste or in ignorance? There are no foolish oaths. All are the mark of men in true Spren over beasts and sub-Spren. The mark of intelligence, free will, and choice. Dalinar chewed on that and found he was not surprised by the extreme opinion. Spren should be extreme. They were forces of nature. But was that how Honor himself, the Almighty, had thought? Sorry, I just choked on water.
Are you okay?
No. The lift finally reached the top floor. Not lift, the lift. A set of steps took him up through a trapdoor onto the very roof of the tower.
I was gonna say, wait, lift?
Yeah, no.
Hello?
He searched out Navani. Elokar stiffly stood at her side wearing a formal golden coat. Though they decided to forego the extravagance of a traditional Alethi wedding, they had invited some others. Brightlord Aladar and his daughter, Sabariel and his mistress, Kalami and Teshiv to act as witnesses. A smattering of Dalinar's officers and scribes filled out the small procession. Kadash the Ardent had come as requested. His scarred bearded face didn't look pleased, but he had come. A good sign. Dalinar steps up to Navani and Elokar. He was saddened by what this would mean for his relationship with the king. He knew that Gavilar would be upset at how Dalinar had treated his son, how he had seized power from the boy. Dalinar rested a hand on his nephew's shoulder. I'm sorry, son, he said. You always are, uncle. It doesn't stop you, but I don't suppose that it should. Your life is defined by deciding what you want, then seizing it. The rest of us could learn from that, if only we could figure out how to keep up. Dalinar winced. I have things to discuss with you, plans that you might appreciate. But for tonight, I simply ask for your blessing, if you can find it to give. This will make my mother happy, Elokar said, so fine. Elokar kissed his mother on the forehead, then left them, striding across the rooftop. Well, Navani said, The only one missing is your spren, Dalinar. If he's going to... A strong breeze struck the top of the tower. A presence emerged in the sky. The Stormfather encompassed everything. A face that stretched to both horizons. The air became strangely still, and everything but the tower's top seemed to fade. It was as if they had slipped into a place outside of time itself. Oaths, the Stormfather rumbled, are the soul of righteousness. If you are to survive the coming tempest, oaths must guide you. I am comfortable with oaths, Stormfather, as you know. Yes, the first man in millennia to bind me. Somehow, Dalinar felt the Spren's attention shifting to Navani. And you, do oaths hold meaning to you? The right oaths, Navani said. And you and your oath to this man? I swear it to him and to you and any who care to listen. Dalinar Kholin is mine and I am his. You have broken oaths before. All people have. We're frail and foolish. This one I will not break. I vow it. The Stormfather seemed content with this. Bondsmith, he asked. I swear it likewise. Navani Kholin is mine and I am hers. I love her. So be it. Dalinar had anticipated thunder, lightning, some kind of celestial trump of victory. Instead, the timelessness ended, the breeze passed, the Stormfather vanished. Adolin, being Adolin, let out a whoop. He gave Dalinar, then Navani, enormous hugs. Renarin followed, more reserved but equally pleased. It seemed that the Stormfather's pronouncement had been dramatic enough that everyone accepted it. Even Elikar gave his mother a hug and Dalinar a clasp on the shoulder before going below. That left only Kadash. The Ardent waited to the end. It was not an Ardent that Dalinar saw, it was a soldier. Dalinar stepped over to Kadash. Bright Lord, Kadash said quietly. Formality, old friend. I wish I could only be here as an old friend. I have to report this, Dalinar. The Ardentia will not be pleased. Surely they cannot deny my marriage if the Stormfather himself blessed the union. A Spren. You expect us to accept the authority of a Spren? A remnant of the Almighty. Dalinar, that's blasphemy. Kadash, you know I'm no heretic. You fought by my side. That's supposed to reassure me? Memories of what we did together, Dalinar? I appreciate the man you have become. You should avoid reminding me of the man you once were. He remembered Kadash, bloodied, kneeling on the ground, having retched until his stomach was empty. A hardened soldier who had encountered something so vile that even he was shaken. He'd left to become an Ardent the next day. The Rift, Dalinar whispered. Rathalos. Dark times need not be dredged up. This isn't about... that day, Dalinar. It's about today, and what you've been spreading among the scribes. Talk of these things you've seen in visions. Holy messages, sent by the Almighty. Holy messages claiming the Almighty is dead, arriving on the eve of the return of the Voidbringers? Dalinar, can't you see how this looks? I'm your Ardent, technically your slave, and yes, perhaps still your friend. I've tried to explain to the councils in Kharbranth and Yakaved that you mean well. I tell the Ardents of the Holy Enclave that you're looking back toward when the Knights Radiant were pure, rather than their eventual corruption. I tell them you have no control over these visions. But Dalinar, that was before you started teaching that the Almighty was dead. They're angry enough over that, and now you've gone and defied convention, spitting in the eyes of the Ardents? I personally don't think it matters if you marry Navani. That prohibition is outdated, to be sure, but what you've done tonight... Dalinar reached to place a hand on Kadash's shoulder, but the man pulled away. Old friend, honor might be dead, but I have felt... something else. Something beyond. A warmth and a light. It is not that God has died. It is that the Almighty was never God. He did his best to guide us, but he was an imposter. Or perhaps only an agent. A being not unlike a Spren. He had the power of a god, but not the pedigree. Kadash looked at him, eyes widening. Please, Dalinar, don't ever repeat what you just said. I think I can explain away what happened tonight. Maybe. But you don't seem to realize you're aboard a ship barely afloat in a storm while you insist on doing a jig on the prow. I will not hold back truth if I find it, Kadash. You just saw that I am literally bound to a spread of oaths. I don't dare lie. I don't think you would lie, Dalinar, but I do think you can make mistakes. Do not forget that I was there. You are not infallible. There? What does he remember that I cannot? Dalinar watched him go. He needed time with Navani, his wife. And that is the end of the chapter.
And yay, that's the wedding. Married.
Yep.
I thought it was going to be a very different wedding.
Yeah, no. They are married. Finally,
it's it was going to be that girl from Kaladin's hometown getting married to that asshole.
Anyways, here's another map of Alethkar. I think we had one all the way back at the beginning of Way of Kings, But this is another map. You can see the different princedoms marked on there, some cities. You can see the city Rathalos, which was just mentioned, and maybe will be relevant as we move forward. Kolinar is kind of at the center of it, and you can see, annotated for your convenience, somebody has added the location of Hearthstone to the map.
Hearthstone?
What the fuck is that? That's where Kaladin is from.
Oh, right.
And it's Nahs. Nahs is, I think I've told you about Nahs before, the world hopper that annotates the different maps and stuff and all the art. But for some reason, he has marked down Kaladin's hometown for somebody.
That's kind of weird.
Chapter 5 is titled Hearthstone. It has Kaladin's symbol, and the epigraph reads, "I can point to the moment when I decided for certain this record had to be written. I hung between realms, seeing into Shadesmar, the realm of the Spren, and beyond." From Oathbringer, Preface. Kaladin walked through a field feeling the weight of his failure. He had been too late to warn his home of the Everstorm. He traveled via Oathgate to the Shattered Plains, then flown from there. The Stormlight had run out in Aladar's princedom, and he had been walking ever since. Syl notes that his eyes had faded to brown again, which happened if he went a few hours without summoning his Shardblade. Kaladin points out that they're about 2 hours from Hearthstone, and Syl is excited. He longed for Stormlight. The Everstorm hadn't recharged his spheres, neither with Stormlight or some other light which he'd feared might happen. He tells her that they failed by not making it home before the Everstorm. Syl tried to reassure him that everything would be alright. Finally, they reached Hearthstone, and Kaladin was shocked by the destruction. Buildings were simply gone, and some had lost their roofs. There wasn't a glimmer of light in the town. A part of him scrunched up inside, huddling into a corner, tired of being whipped so often. He'd embraced his power. He'd taken the path of a Radiant. Why hadn't it been enough? He wanted to find his home, see what had happened, but he couldn't bring himself to face that destruction. Instead, he made his way to the City Lord's Manor, where the town's parchment had been kept. He didn't care if he found Roshon's broken corpse there, killed when the parchment transformed and broke free. Syl notes Gloomspren as they get closer to the manor, which she says are extremely uncommon. She also says that one of her aunts used to hunt them, though she can't remember her name. The Onispren hadn't really been her aunt, but Syl had referred to her by the title. A light was coming from the manor house. He crept towards it, unsure if it was humans or Voidbringers that had survived. As he got closer, he heard an unusual amount of noise coming from the house. As he passed where the parchment had been kept, he found a large hole ripped in the side of the pen. Someone exited the manor. Kaladin dove to the side and prepared to summon Syl, but it was a human, not a Voidbringer. The man shouts at Kaladin, asking if he's a deserter, and Kaladin steps out with his hands raised. He doesn't recognize the man, but allows him to escort Kaladin into the building. And that is the end of Chapter 5. Chapter 6, Four Lifetimes, has Kaladin's symbol, and the epigraph reads, "I thought I was surely dead. Certainly some who saw farther than I did thought I had fallen." From Oathbringer, Preface. Kaladin felt better as he entered the manor and recognized people, though they did not recognize him. He was led through the house by the soldier and noted dozens of familiar faces. The townspeople packed the manor, filling every room. He frantically began to search for his parents. The soldier stopped him, and the townspeople watched Kaladin fearfully. The soldier tries to force Kaladin to keep moving, but is pretty easily sent stumbling. The man watches Kaladin fearfully as he follows the sounds of the wounded to a surgeon's triage room. A figure knelt by one of the pallets, carefully splinting a broken arm. Kaladin had known as soon as he'd heard those moans of pain where he'd find his father. Liren glanced at him. Kaladin's father looked weathered. The hair was grayer than Kaladin remembered, the face gaunter, but he was the same. Balding, diminutive, thin, bespectacled, and amazing. "What's this?" Liren asked. "Did the High Prince's house send soldiers already?" That was faster than expected. "How many did you bring? We can certainly use..." Liren hesitated. Then his eyes opened wide. "Hello, father," Kaladin said. "It is you," Liren said. Then he scrambled over and caught Kaladin in an embrace. "Oh, Cal, my boy, my little boy. Hesina! Hesina!" Kaladin's mother appeared in the doorway a moment later.
Oh, they're still alive!
She raised
now.
She raised her gloved safe hand to her lips. She reached to the side of Kaladin's face with a soft touch. Syl zipped around in a ribbon of light, laughing. Kaladin couldn't laugh, not until it had been said. "I'm sorry, father, mother," he whispered. "I joined the army to protect him, but I could barely protect myself." He found himself shaking, and he put his back to the wall, letting himself sink down until he was seated. "I let Tien die. I'm sorry. It's my fault." "Oh, Kaladin," Hesina said, kneeling down beside him and pulling him into an embrace. "We got your letter, but over a year ago they told us you had died as well." "I should have saved him," Kaladin whispered. "You shouldn't have gone in the first place," Liren said. "But now, Almighty, now you're back." Liren stood up, tears leaking down his cheeks. My son is alive." A short time later, Kaladin sat among the wounded, holding a cup of warm soup in his hands. One of the soldiers explains to Liren that Kaladin has a slave's brand. Kaladin sipped his soup. His mother knelt beside him, one hand on his shoulder, protective. "The wrong way high storm did break many of the town's buildings," Hesina explained to him softly. "But our home still stands. We had to dedicate your spot to something else, Cal, but we can make space for you." Kaladin glanced at the soldier. "Don't worry about that. We'll deal with it, whatever the trouble is. With all these wounded pouring in from the villages around, Roshon will need your father's skill. Roshon won't go making a storm and risk Liren's discontent, and you won't be taken from us again." She talked to him as if he were a child. What a surreal sensation being back here, being treated like he was still the boy who had left for war 5 years ago. Three men bearing their son's name had lived and died in that time. The soldier who had been forged in Amaram's army, the slave so bitter and angry. His parents had never met Captain Kaladin, bodyguard to the most powerful man in Roshar. And then there was the next man, the man he was becoming. A man who owned the skies and spoke ancient oaths. 5 years had passed, and 4 lifetimes. "He's a runaway slave," the guard captain hissed. "We can't just ignore that, surgeon. He probably stole the uniform. And even if for some reason he was allowed to hold his spear despite his brands, he's a deserter. Look at those haunted eyes and tell me you don't see a man who has done terrible things." "He's my son," Liren said. "I'll buy his right of slavery. You're not taking him. Tell Roshon he can either let this slide or he can go without a surgeon, unless he assumes Mara can take over after just a few years of apprenticeship." Kaladin realizes that the injuries the townspeople possess are from a natural disaster, not a battle. "Things have gotten better since you left," Hesina promised Kaladin. "Roshon isn't as bad as he once was. I think he feels guilty. We can rebuild, be a family again. And there's something else you need to know about. We..." "Hesina," Liren said. "Yes? Write a letter to the High Prince's administrators. Explain the situation. See if we can get a forbearance, or at least an explanation." He looked to the soldier. "Will that satisfy your master? We can wait upon a higher authority, and in the meantime, I can have my son back." "We'll see," the soldier said. "I'm not sure how much I like the idea of a Shash-branded man running around my town." Hesina rose to join Liren. Was it any wonder that his parents still thought of him as a child? He'd come in looking ragged and abandoned, then had started sobbing about Tien's death. Being home brought out the child in him. Perhaps it was time for once to stop letting the rain dictate his mood. He couldn't banish the seed of darkness inside him, but he didn't need to let it rule him either.
Do they have Fabrials that are, like, did they bring any Fabrials with them that can connect to, like, the area where Kaladin is?
Do you mean...
Did they bring Fabrials? Yeah, the Spanreeds. That are connected to...
Yeah, Tashik?
Who can...
We will...
Basically get down the line and be like, Kaladin's fine.
We can...
He's good. He's fine.
We can... We'll find out in a minute.
Because it would... If not, then it would just be faster for like, hey, Kaladin, go fly off to Dalinar, get a letter of approval, and then, like, come back.
They'll address that in a minute. Syl walked up to him in the air. "They're like I remember them." "Remember them," Kaladin whispered. "Syl, you never knew me when I lived here." "That's true," she said. "So how can you remember them?" "Because I do. Everyone is connected, Kaladin. Everything is connected. I didn't know you then, but the winds did, and I am of the winds. Your honor, Spren. The winds are of honor. We are kindred blood. You don't have blood. And you don't have an imagination, it appears. Besides, there was... another voice, pure with a song like tapped crystal, distant yet demanding. She smiled and zipped away. Well, the world might have been upended, but Syl was as impenetrable as ever. The book said the same thing. Galadin climbed to his feet.
They weren't looking at... Fuck, what's his brother's name?
Tien?
Tien. They weren't looking at Tien, were they?
Not Syl.
Well, but the winds.
The Honor Spren?
Or the Spren. She says... I don't know.
Yeah.
The thing that she said made me think maybe it was Tien, but...
It is possible. I don't know for certain. I know that there was weird stuff happening around Tien. I'm not sure if the Honor Spren were involved. But I know that it's... I would not be surprised if they were.
That's sad.
Kaladin climbed to his feet. He walked toward his parents. A figure stood right outside the room, speaking with the guard, Rishon. He turned toward Kaladin. So you're alive. They didn't teach you to keep yourself in the army, I see. Let me have a look at those brands of yours. He reached over and held up the hair in front of Kaladin's forehead. Storms, boy. What did you do? Hit a light eyes? Yes, Kaladin said. Then punched him. He bashed Rishon right in the face.
Yes!
Rishon dropped like a felled tree. That, Kaladin said, was for my friend Moash. And that is the end of chapter 6.
Nice.
Chapter 7, A Watcher at the Rim. It has Kaladin's symbol. And the epigraph reads, I did not die, I experienced something worse. From Oathbringer, Preface. Kaladin.
Oh, lovely.
Kaladin, Liren exclaimed. What are you doing, son? Rishon sputtered on the ground. Guards, take him! You hear me? Syl landed on Kaladin's shoulder. He probably deserved that. The guards scrambled to help Rishon to his feet while the captain leveled his sword at Kaladin. A third joined them. Well, Rishon demanded, strike him down! Please, no, Kaladin's mother cried. He's just distraught. He... It's all right, mother. That was only payment for a little unsettled debt between Rishon and me. He met the eyes of the guards and they shuffled uncertainly. Since leaving Hearthstone, Kaladin had met true evil, and Rishon hardly compared. Hadn't he sworn to protect even those he didn't like? Wasn't the whole point of what he had learned to keep him from doing things like this? He glanced at Syl and she nodded to him. Do better. For a short time, it had been nice to just be Cal again. Fortunately, he wasn't that youth any longer. He was a new person, and for the first time in a long, long while, he was happy with that person. Kaladin seizes control of the situation, asking the guards what happened to the Parshmen. The captain of Rishon's guard tells the Bright Lord that they should all just forget about the punch. Kaladin asks for a room to talk in that isn't filled with people. Cal, Liren said, you're speaking foolishness. Don't give orders to Bright Lord Rishon. Well, Kaladin barked, empty room. Up the stairs, sir, one of the soldiers said. Library is empty.
Let's
Excellent.
Go.
Join me up there, men. Kaladin started toward the stairs. Nobody
Liren's
followed.
Liren's like, don't tell people yeah. what to do. Yeah. You're a dark guy. And Kaladin's like, are you kidding? I'm a Radiant. I can tell people what to do.
Kaladin started toward the stairs. Nobody followed, not even his parents. I gave you an order, Kaladin said. I'm not fond of repeating myself. And what, Rishon said, makes you think you can order anyone around, boy? Kaladin turned back and swept his arm before him, summoning Syl. A shard blade formed from mist into his hand. He spun the blade and rammed her down into the floor in one single smooth motion. He held the grip, feeling his eyes bleed to blue. Everything grew still. Townspeople froze. Rishon's eyes bulged. Curiously, Kaladin's father just lowered his head and closed his eyes. Any other questions? Kaladin asked. In the library, the guards are filling Kaladin in. The Parshmen didn't attack anybody after their transformation. They just broke their cage open and left. He asks if they tracked their direction, but the soldiers tell him that they were more focused on surviving. He promises to tell Elokar about the damage done to the town, but worries that the entire kingdom is just as bad. For now, he needed to find out what the Voidbringers were planning. He asks for maps of Alethkar and several horses. The guards say they'll need the Lady of the Manor's permission, and Kaladin tells them to ask the Ardents to prepare the span reed connected to Tashik so he can send word to Dalinar. Rishon isn't sure why the Parshmen matter so much, and Kaladin informs him that it is the Desolation. The man seemed despondent at the news. Syl, Kaladin whispered, I might need you again. You sound apologetic. I am. I don't like the idea of swinging you about, smashing you into things. She sniffed. Firstly, I don't smash into things. I am an elegant and graceful weapon, stupid. Secondly, why would you be bothered? It doesn't feel right. You're a woman, not a weapon. Wait, so this is about me being a girl? No, Maybe, it just feels strange. You don't ask your other weapons how they feel about being swung about. My other weapons aren't people. He hesitated. Are they? Everything has a spren. His mother had taught him that from an early age. So, some of my spears have been women then? He asked. Female, at least, Syl said. Roughly half, as these things tend to go. It's your fault for personifying us, so no complaining. Of course, some of the old spren have four genders instead of two. What? Why? Because humans didn't imagine those ones, silly. He summoned her as a shard blade again and used it to draw Roshone's attention back. Kaladin says that they have to set their differences aside, that as much as he hates Roshone, the people of Hearthstone need him to lead them right now. Roshone continues to be despondent, but Laurel enters and tells Kaladin that they'll work with him.
Well, she's alive, but...
She's alive. He doesn't recognize her as the youth that he had known years ago, and she tells him that they have a spanry to Tashik he can use. She also says that they have one to the Queen Regent in Kolinar, but that one hasn't been responsive lately. Kaladin tells her that he dreamed of returning and saving her from Roshone. She asks why he thinks she needed saving, and says that she's happy as she is. She says that he takes after his father, always thinking that they need to save everyone, even those who would rather they minded their own business. I'll go set up the span reach, he said. It might take some time to get a reply. In the meantime, the Ardents should be fetching your maps. Great, Kaladin said. I'm going to go speak with my parents. Syl zipped over his shoulder. So that's the girl you were going to marry? No, Kaladin whispered. That's a girl I was never going to marry, no matter what happened. I like her. You would. Kaladin finds his father helping a young boy and falls back into his role as a surgeon's assistant. His suggestions to his father are extreme, immediately jumping to amputation. Liren soothed the young boy, saying that removing the wounded arm would not be needed. You've hardened, Liren said to Kaladin. I was worried you'd never grow calluses. Kaladin didn't reply. In truth, his calluses weren't as deep as his father might have wanted. But you've also become one of them. My eye color doesn't change a thing. I wasn't speaking of your eye color, son. I don't give two chips whether a man is light-eyed or not. What you've become is a killer. You solve problems with the fist and the sword. I had hoped that you would find a place among the army's surgeons. I wasn't given much of a choice. It's a long story. I'll tell you sometime. The less soul-crushing parts of it, at least. I don't suppose you're going to stay? No. I need to follow those parchmen. More killing, then? And you honestly think we shouldn't fight the Voidbringers, father? Liren hesitated. No, he whispered. I know that war is inevitable. I just didn't want you to have to be a part of it. I've seen what it does to men. War flays their souls, and those are wounds I can't heal. He turned to Kaladin. We're surgeons. Let others rend and break. We must not harm others. No, Kaladin said. You're a surgeon, father, but I'm something else. A watcher at the rim. Words spoken to Dalinar Kalin in a vision. Kaladin stood up. I will protect those who need it. Today, that means hunting down some Voidbringers. Liren looked away. Very well. I am glad you returned, son. I'm glad you're safe. Kaladin rested his hand on his father's shoulder. Life before death, father. See your mother before you leave, Liren said. She has something to show you. Kaladin went back up to check on Laurel and found that the span reed was working. He's surprised that they have Stormlight, and she reminds him of the surprise high storm that had blown through a few days before, the one the Stormfather had summoned to wipe out the battle at Narok. Kaladin is able to talk to Dalinar and tells him about his discoveries in Hearthstone. He tells the High Prince that he's going to chase the Voidbringers down and find out what they're up to. Dalinar tells him to take the span reed and send a glyph each evening, and they say life before death to each other before ending the communication. And this is like when you start to pick up that this is now their mantra to each other. Like, whenever Radiants leave each other or whatever, you know how Jedi are like, may the Force be with you or whatever?
Yeah, they go life before death.
Yeah.
Not the full thing, just that one part.
Just the beginning.
That's weird, but okay.
His activities had drawn quite a crowd of people. He intended to ask if anyone had infused spheres, but was interrupted by the sight of his mother. She was speaking with several young girls and held a toddler in her arms. Kaladin stopped at the foot of the steps. The little boy was perhaps a year old, chewing on his hand and babbling around his fingers. Kaladin, meet your brother, Hesina said. Some of the girls were watching him while I helped
Hello?
With the triage. A brother, Kaladin whispered. A brother. Kaladin reached out. His mother let him take the little boy, hold him in hands that seemed too rough to be touching such soft skin. Kaladin trembled, then pulled the child tight against him. Memories of this place had not broken him, and seeing his parents had not overwhelmed him. But this? He could not stop the tears. He felt like a fool. It wasn't as if this changed anything. Bridge Four were his brothers now, as close to him as any blood relative. And yet he wept. What's his name? Oridan. Child of peace, Kaladin whispered. A good name. A very good name. Kaladin handed little Oridan back to his mother. People crowded at the edges of the room. He was quite the spectacle. The surgeon's son turned slave, turned shardbearer. Hearthstone wouldn't see this much excitement for another 100 years. At least not if Kaladin had any say about it. He nodded to his father, then turned to the crowd. Does anyone here have infused spheres? I will trade you. 2 chips for 1. Bring them forth. Kaladin's mother made the trades for him. What he ended up with was only a pouch's worth. He tied the pouch closed, then looked over his shoulder as his father stepped up. Liren took a small glowing diamond chip from his pocket, then handed it to Kaladin. Kaladin accepted it, then glanced at his mother and the little boy in her arms. His brother. I want to take you to safety, he said to Liren. I need to leave now, but I'll be back soon to take you to... No, Liren said. Father, it's the desolation. Nearby, people gasped, their eyes haunted. Kaladin should have done this in private. He leaned in toward Liren. I know of a place that is safe. For you, mother, for little Oridan. Please, don't be stubborn. For once in your life, you can take them if they'll go. But I'm staying here, particularly if what you just said is true. These people will need me. We'll see. I'll return as soon as I can. Kaladin set his jaw, then walked to the front of the door of the manor. He pulled it open. He paused, looking back at the room, full of dirties. He paused, looked back at the room full of dirty townspeople, homeless and frightened. They'd heard, overheard him, but they'd known already. He'd heard them whispering. Voidbringers. The desolation. He couldn't leave them like this. You heard correctly, Kaladin said. The Voidbringers have returned. Kaladin sucked in some of the stormlight from his pouch. Pure luminescent smoke began to rise from his skin, distinctly visible in the dim room. He lashed himself upward so that he rose into the air, then added the lashing downward, leaving him to hover about 2 feet above the floor, glowing. Sil formed from mist as a shard spear in his hand. High Prince Dalinar Kalin has refounded the Knights Radiant, and this time we will not fail you. The expressions in the room ranged from adoring to terrified. Kaladin found his father's face. Liren's jaw had dropped. Hesina clutched her infant child in her arms, and her expression was one of pure delight. You, I will protect, little one. I will protect them all. He nodded to his parents, then turned and lashed himself outward, streaking away into the rain-soaked night. He'd stop at Strinken, about half a day's walk or a short flight to the south, and see if he could trade spheres there. Then, he'd hunt Voidbringers. And that is where we will leave off for tonight.
Oh, okay. Aww.
Kaladin got to reunite with his parents, meet his baby brother, and reveal to his town that the Knights Radiant have returned.
And that he's one of them.
And that he's one of them. Because it's... Nobody knows, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, the Knights Radiant, they returned at Narok, which was a couple days ago in the middle of nowhere. nobody knows. So yes, this is on this just section of Kaladin returning to his family is one of my favorites, just because honestly when I read the first book I was not expecting to ever see Liren and Hesina again, so the fact that like they did pop up in this book I was really caught off guard.
I expected them to be dead.
And the fact that they weren't dead was really nice. And Syl is being cryptic about some things that are interesting. There's a... She said a couple things in there that were weird.
Yeah.
Next time... I almost said next week, but we do these twice a week. Next time, we are
going... I mean, it is next week.
So. It is next week, you're right. We're going to get into Shallan's POV.
We haven't had that yet.
We have not yet had that in this book. We'll get Shallan, and we'll get a little bit more... Yeah, we'll finally get into Shallan's, but we get another Dalinar flashback.
Okay. Already?
Yes. Which is the one that made this the episode a little bit longer, but yeah, next week's gonna be a little bit longer of an episode because of Dalinar's flashback, but we have to get through it. That's all I've got for you.
Cool.
Follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. Follow the podcast on Twitter at SpeakStormlight if it's still around. Twitter, that is. Join our Discord. The link to join that is in the episode description. Email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Yeah, that's it. As always, guys, Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.